Okay.
Okay. Okay, great, thank you.
It might show people up on top who asked to be, you know, put themselves in. Might just show you like in a, on
as,
a blind.
As the name.
Whether that means she can see you or not, I don't know.
Right, no, because then I would see myself too. Thank you. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah. The cooked food, I'm not coming until a day or two before Yom Tov. You mean the non-perishables? I'm going to come Sunday with all that, so you can look it over and make sure everything's there that you need. Well, I would do it in stages so it's not overwhelming. Right, you know what? Like, do the drawers, do the hydrators. You can just line them with paper, put back what you have. Okay, so just do like a little bit at a time. Okay. No, I'll talk to mommy later. Are you going to get on and watch Rachel Levine? I told mommy she should watch Rachel Levine at 7 o'clock. Okay. Okay, bye.
Hi, Rachel. Renee and Avi here, ready to hear you.
Okay. You want to stick a chicken here, but here.
Thank you. Going out for food. If you're with a spouse, you're together all the time anyway. You can walk arm in arm down the street. There's no social distancing there. It's where your kids. So depending on the situation, people got to use their brains. People got to use their heads.
Hi. It's Rachel Lurie. I've just dialed in.
Diego is such a great chat. So, so nice to see you guys. Thank God for this technology.
Does anybody hear me?
I'm muted. Hi, everyone. So nice to see you. I'm not Aaron Strum. I don't know how to be me.
I do. Rachel?
Yes. Oh, someone was talking to me and then they just went on mute. Sorry.
It's Lisa Buxbaum. Hi.
Hi, Lisa.
So if you go to the top right of the box that says Aaron Strum, just go into the box where you see your name. And in the little box on the top, there'll be an icon that will say rename, and you can
put it. Oh, perfecto. Thank you.
The top right there on your box.
Got it.
All right.
Thanks, Lisa. Okay, I'm renaming myself. Awesome. Terrific. Oh, thank you.
Gladys Rachel.
I've been spending this whole week under alternate identities. Whatever Gladys, the last person's identity was on the computer, that's who I become. So good. Now it's my name. Terrific. Okay, so let's see. Let me give it 2 more minutes and we'll get started. It's so wonderful to see so many faces. Anyone who's willing to come on video, I'd love to see you. It's such a pleasure, and I find it so challenging to talk to names, not faces. So if you're willing to come on, great to see you. I won't care if you come in and out and walk around and be everywhere, but either way, wonderful that we can all be together. Let me just give it another minute or two. And then I think what I'm going to do when I start talking is I'll just mute everybody so that we don't have a lot of background noise. And I will try to unmute unmute everyone periodically to pause, to ask questions, have a discussion if I can. So let's do that. And just give me one sec. Okay.
I have to.
Okay. If I mute all, will I mute myself too?
Rachel?
No.
Lisa?
Yeah, Lisa.
If people want to raise their hand, they can go to the participant bar on the bottom. It's 1, 2, 3, 4 in. And there's a little function where you press raise hand, and then Rachel, will see our hands raised, and then you can unmute each person.
All right.
You have 34 people
amazing.
Muted. It's going to be mass pandemonium.
That sounds like a much better plan. Okay. I will try. Hi. This is certainly, so I'm going to mute.
mute all. Have I? Are you guys on mute? Okay, so I just muted everyone, and yes, if you can raise your hand, I will certainly try to respond. This is a new mode of communication for me, so I'm trying my best to get used to it. And also giving presentations is actually not something I do very often. I usually work one-on-one or with couples, and that feels a lot more comfortable for me, but I felt it was just so important for all of us to see each other and to be together in whatever way we can and to support each other through this challenging time. So wonderful to see so many of you. I just want to start by saying that I miss you and I'm thinking of you. And that the highlight and the main reason that when they asked if I'd be open to having this talk was really so that I could connect and see you. And let's think of this maybe not as a one-off lecture. It's certainly not meant to be a lecture. It's really meant to open up a conversation. But let's think of this as the start of a dialogue. And so anything that I say tonight, if it sparks thoughts or reflections, I'd love to hear back from you. I'd love to be in touch with you. So what I wanted to do just to get us started tonight is, first of all, to acknowledge what a challenging time we're in right now. It's a challenging time for each of us in somewhat different ways, and the most difficult parts of it are a little bit different for each of us, but we are, as a community, as a nation, and as humanity, going through something difficult. I'm not one who kind of likes to sugarcoat things or, you know, try to get you to think of the silver lining. But what I am here to do is think about if we can conceptualize what we're going through in a way that helps us create some sense of stability, some sense of meaning, and much more important than anything else is connect to the strengths that we all have. We each have strengths to navigate this challenging situation. And so, you know, I'm speaking and I see in this audience to people with a lot more life experience in many cases than I have. And so I speak out of great humility. And again, just to say that let's kind of think through this together and think about how we can help each other now. I think as we conceptualize, what I really want to think about is this situation that we're in as part of a narrative of our lives. Right, we all have narratives. We all have a story to tell. We are all living our story at every moment, and that story is made up of many wonderful things, we hope, and many, many challenges. And right now, we're in a pretty tough space in that narrative. This is a challenge, and I want to think of it as a narrative because for several reasons. One is it helps us create structure, right? In the narrative of our lives, chapters have beginnings, middles, and end. And we don't know what the end looks like yet, and we don't know when the end will come, and we're not the author. But we do want to hold on to that this is a piece of our narrative, of a larger narrative of who we are and our lives, and we can accept more easily then that we will try our best to get through this chapter in our narrative. I think the other thing that's really important about a narrative is what we understand, you know, there's a type of therapy called narrative therapy. And the idea of narrative therapy is helping people really develop and understand their values, their life story and context so that they can tap into what's most important to them. How do you want to look back on your life? What are the things you want to pass forward and you want others to think about when they think of you? What are the skills you've developed because of those values? So where have you put your efforts? and where do you want to put your efforts? And also, because your narrative doesn't start and end with your own life. Your narrative is part of a larger familial narrative. It's part of a larger national narrative. And connecting to that allows you to think about, and I think gain great amounts of strength, both from yourself, right? And in thinking about how you want, what you want to do to cope and to think about and to process and to go through this experience, and to attach to others in your past, to others in your present, to create something broader than just what you're going through alone. And the reason I think that that's so crucial is because we really want to combat that feeling of loneliness that comes with isolation. And one of the most important ways of combating isolation, I think, is to conceptualize yourself in a broader context and realizing that maybe you are not with other people, but you are not alone. And so I want to take some time to really think about those different levels and areas of our narrative and how thinking about them can be helpful to us. And the three that I want to think about are self, our own self narratives, our family narratives, and our national narratives. And I, instead of starting with the self, I think we have to come back to that because that's what we're going to really need to be thinking about and focusing on tonight. But let's start with family and national narratives and see if we can kind of reflect on those as a way of figuring out how do we want to cope now? What's going to be helpful for us to cope now? There was this amazing New York Times article that came out actually a while back in 2013, and a friend of mine reminded me about it. And it was, I think, let me just look, the title was The Stories That Bind Us. And it was by Bruce Feiler, and it came out in 2013. And I don't know if any of you have seen it or if it's come up again recently, but it feels very poignant now. And what he did, he told was a story about a research study that had been done, a social psychological research study that was done in the summer of 2001. And it was done by these professors at Emory University. And one of the professors, whose name was Dr. Marshall Duke, had a wife who was a special education teacher. And as a special education teacher, she was reflecting on why some kids in her classroom were more resilient than others, why some struggled with stress and others did better under stress. And she came up with the hypothesis that the kids who knew more about their families and their family histories tended to do better. And this psychologist found that fascinating, right? Why would, you know, the stress of your school day be impacted by how well you know your family and your family history? And he decided to do a study on it, and he created a measure called Do You Know? And he, I think, enlisted somewhere, I don't remember, but somewhere between 40 and 100 families and children into his study. And he took several different psychological measures and then created this one piece, which was asking them, do you know? And on this were 20 questions about their family. Do you know where your grandparents were from? Do you know how your parents met? Do you know the story of your birth? Just sort of just a host of questions, both about their immediate family and their slightly extended family. And what they found, which was fascinating, that of all the different psychological measures they took, this measure was the single strongest predictor of self-esteem, of sense of control, when the children felt a sense of control, and about their ability to cope with stress. Of anything. And they thought, okay, fascinating. Now what happened was, remember I said this was in the summer of 2001. So immediately after was 9/11. And they recognized that they had an opportunity, however you want to frame that, to look at how these children who were not immediately and directly affected by 9/11, but who all were part of a national trauma, were responding and reacting. And what they found, which was so fascinating, but at this point expected, was that the kids who were coping better, who felt a greater sense of control, who felt more sure that their family was going to be okay, and that they themselves, these were little kids, were going to get through this, were the kids who knew their family better. The kids who knew more stories about their parents, about their grandparents, about where they came from, and how they ended up being in the place that they were. And I thought about this study in the context of what we're going through, because I think one of the biggest challenges is to shift away from the moment to moment which we're living in, which is incredibly stressful and challenging, and find ways to shift to a broader perspective that can create a sense of support for us and can tie us in to our sense of strength. And I think this model is an important one because we need to be able to look at who we are in the context of our family. This is a time not just to check in family members and your loved ones about how you're doing, but to spend some time reflecting with them. What have we as a family been through? What do you think Zadie's response would have been to this situation? You know, how do you think family members in the past would have coped? What do you think they'd want us or me to do right now? If they could give me guidance or advice, what would that look like? What tapping into your family does, and I'll say this as the last part of that study, is fascinating. It's not to sugarcoat it. What they actually found was there's three types of family narratives. There's the ascending narrative. We came from nothing, rags to riches. We had nothing, but they survived and they came over and now look at what we have. There's the descending narrative. We used to be so fill in the blank, so wealthy, so secure, so well known, and then it all fell apart. And then there's the oscillating narrative. And what they found was that the kids who understood their family narrative as an oscillating one, which is really probably the most real narrative for most people's lives and families' lives, they were the ones of all the kids that had more resilience that had the most. We've had some good times. We've had some really, really challenging times as a family. And the thing is that we have found ways to make it through, both the good and the bad. And so I think this might be a nice opportunity when we talk so much about social connection and making sure you're connecting with people that care about you and that you care about. But what I think often we find is that those connections can be too repetitive. We're spending a little too much time talking about your worries about the virus and how you're doing and kind of the same conversations. Those conversations can sometimes be anxiety provoking, but we're not sure how to shift. That asking deeper questions, bringing up shared memories, and this doesn't have to be with actual family. This can be with family however you define family. It can be with childhood friends where you may have shared a mentor or a teacher. This could be with people you grew up in a community with. This is about conceptualizing family as the loved ones in your life and the people that you think you can think back on and who might still be in their life that can share with you and share their thoughts on how you as a family might be able to cope, what your strengths are as a family, what your challenges have been as a family. And so that's the first piece of narrative that I think this is a real opportunity to tie into, to gain a sense of support and to step back from the moment and the day-to-day stressors into something a little bigger. I don't necessarily want to stop now, but if you have a question or you want to raise a hand, really please feel free at any time. I'm trying to scroll through. I don't know if you raise a hand. I hope I'll just see it. The second piece I want to talk about as we're coming. Oh, Lisa has a hand. Great. Are you? I see you. I see you, and I will unmute you. Okay, sorry, Lisa, give me a moment. I think,
okay.
I don't know.
Can you hear me?
I'm trying to, oh, hi, Lisa.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, everyone.
This is Lisa Buxbaum, everybody, hi.
Hi. Thanks for your beautiful piece on narrative, very powerful. I just wanna give some people a practical action step. One of the most powerful positive psychology interventions, it's called the gratitude letter. And it ties into a lot of things that Rachel's been talking about, savoring memories, creating and deepening those links. So the gratitude letter is something that you could write it to a family member who's living, someone who's already, you know, passed away, but you write it yourself. And then you can, if the person is alive, what you can do is you can call them and read it to them or do a Zoom session with them or mail it to them. And that's also like giving you more savoring. Like, I remember the time when I was a child and my grandmother did such and such. And then to be able to tell that person what they meant to you, really, it gives the person who wrote the letter benefits 3 and 6 months out. And it also gives the person who is the recipient of the letter a lot of positive benefits as well. So just wanted to share that.
Amazing. Thank you, Lisa. Yes, that's amazing. And that's a wonderful, wonderful idea. And I'm going to ask you, I guess, to remute yourself because I don't know how to do that. So I think as I said, we're thinking now first about the family narrative and then the national narrative. We're coming up on Pesach. Pesach is, and we're going to spend some time thinking both practically and from this perspective of narrative about how to cope with this Pesach in particular. But certainly Pesach is the beginning of our national narrative. And I think we want to really step back. This is a time to step back and appreciate all the way back to Pesach and to the concept of why we start the Seder by talking Gnut and talking about the challenge and the slavery and the difficult times. Why don't we just end with the celebration and the Shevach? Because without context, the successes and the survival and all of the blessings that we've had have a less meaning. We have to think about the broader context. I don't know how many of you got to listen to Maurizio Molinari speak this afternoon. Yes, he did an interview with him. But one of the things that was very powerful in my mind was when he talked about, you know, our immediate thought is back to the Holocaust. And for many of us, this may trigger thoughts of how did our relatives survive the challenges, forget isolation, but all the threats and all the dangers and all the horrors that were then. He said, well, let's look back even further than that to the Black Plague in the 1300s, where they were spending months and years in isolation as their only means of staying safe. We have such a rich and powerful national narrative. And talk about oscillations, right? Our national narrative is not one that is rose-colored by any means. Try if you can to connect. Maybe this is a time to read more about our national narrative, to specifically think about a time in our national history that you don't know much about. That could be our modern history, the history of state and the struggles we had to get to where we are today. It can be ancient history, it can be anywhere in between. But can you connect from your family history to our national history, to how the heroes of our national history have survived, have coped with, have even thrived at times of great, great crisis? And can we attach to that strength? Because their strength is our strength, right? They are part of our narrative. We are part of theirs. And so it's not, oh, they were strong and that ended. No, that has been passed to us and we want to connect to that. And then, of course, that takes us back to the us and the self narrative. And that's where this is all leading to, which is the point of connecting to your family narrative and to your national narrative is the time where we have to put an immense amount of active effort into digging deep, finding our reserves, developing in ourselves and our ability to cope, right? We all have challenges, and there are parts of this that are going to be real struggles, and we are all going to become face-to-face pretty quickly and clearly, if we haven't yet, with some of the parts of ourselves that we don't like to think much about, that might be really hard, that we might be struggling with. But we also really want to identify, where are our strengths? How do we want to think about getting through this time? Right? How do we want this narrative to be written for us? We don't know the end, but if we have to tell our, you know, we have to tell our story. This is where I was during this coronavirus. This is how I coped with this. This is what I learned about myself. What do we want that narrative to look like? And that is not a one-time thing to think about, because as we really know, connecting to places of meaning and of faith and of strength, that only works if we do it repeatedly, right? So we can do that for 5 minutes, but then when you get buzzed and zinged with all the new information and with all the new stressors, or with I can't concentrate and I need to work, and with all the other stuff going on, it really goes to the background very quickly. So I really want you to think about this, and that's why I think Lisa's point was so poignant, which is, how can you make this a routine part of the experience you're going through? Whether it's your narrative, whether it's your family or your national narrative, what can you do to make sure that this becomes part of the routine you're doing now? We all know that feeling of inspiration, whether for you it's after Yom Kippur, or whether it's after you watch a really amazing movie or documentary, or whether you hear this terrific speaker. And we also all know that, give, you know, with best intentions, that just doesn't last very long. And we try, and that's natural, and that's the normal, you know, that's a natural psychological phenomenon that we have to toggle back and forth between being inspired and coping with practical daily life. So I want, at this time, as you know, we're 2 weeks out from Pesach, to really think about, is this something we can kind of create a routine around? And Lisa's idea is sparking me to think about a routine that we can do on our own, and more importantly, a routine we can do with others. There's a reason we celebrate anniversaries. There's a reason that in our religion, you know, we have such structure to all of our holidays. It's because that structure and those routines trigger thoughts and feelings and memories. So how can you connect to your narrative in a way that's not just in your head, but perhaps this is a time you can think about your own ways of expressing that, of communicating it with others, of sharing it with your loved ones. Perhaps it's going to be through writing. Perhaps it's going to be through art. Perhaps it's going to be by listening over to a song that resonates for you now as like, yeah, this is going to be the song of that narrative. Right? But small rituals and routines and visuals can all really help us connect to our narrative, tune into our narrative, and develop that narrative. So that's a frame that I hope will be helpful for you. I want to now kind of shift a bit to recognizing that we also have a lot of practical coping that we have to really be doing, and that we really have to be fighting for. This is a time where each of us has to fight for our mental health. And we have to dig pretty deep to do that. We have to find our strengths. We have to access them. We have to find our support systems, and we have to ask for that, right? We can't go through this alone. And so on a practical level, and I know I'm sort of shifting, but I want us to be able to think about both these pieces. How will our narrative help us, and how will thinking about us, ourselves in a larger perspective, help us connect to those strengths? And also to acknowledge that this is going to be a challenge and this is going to be hard. I want to just throw out that for everything I'm saying, and that I hope you're feeling connected to and attaching to, if you are feeling so overwhelmed that anything I'm saying is like, that is so far from what I'm dealing with. I can't even breathe. I can't get past my panic. I can't concentrate. I can't listen to what you're saying right now, Rachel, because I can't hold on to a thought for more than 5 minutes. I'm really anxious. If you find that all the ideas and best intentions are really sort of outside of your grasp, this is now a time to also reach out for help. I would be happy to help you think about what that looks like and to connect. But this isn't something that we want to go through stoically or with shame. You know, there is no normal reaction here, and there's no appropriate reaction here because the situation isn't a normal one. And so what we're trying to do is connect and cope with our own resiliencies and our strengths. But I also want to say that sometimes that's hard, and sometimes it is a bit beyond where we feel like we can do it. And please, please, please ask for help. There is help out there. Just like, and if you find that you're also using other means to cope, whether that is self-medication, alcohol, whatever it is, that you're not able to work, you're meant to be working from home and you're not able. But if this is that tough, that as you're listening to this lecture, you're feeling more anxious and stressed rather than because you're not able to even hear it. You're thinking, what is she talking about? A narrative and connecting to meaning. And that's just really not resonating with you. Take this moment of the lecture, of this talk, this conversation, to say to yourself, that's okay. It's okay that that's where I am, and I can get help for that. And so, sorry, that was like a bit of an interlude, but I did want to kind of put that out there because I do find that it's important for people to accept and be aware of, like, when someone's trying to be helpful and whatever that help is just going the wrong way or making me more anxious, just pause and notice and be okay and say, you know what, this isn't working for me. What can I do for myself right now? Or do I need some extra help or support? So in shifting in that direction and then in kind of integrating those two pieces, which is this is a time to really cope and think about our practical coping and how we're going to get through this, this entire period of isolation and Pesach specifically, and balancing the day-to-day with the more meaningful, deeper connections, I want to shift now for a couple of minutes to Pesach. Every one of us is going to be in a somewhat different situation, but whatever that situation is, it is, I imagine, not what you expected it to be, and maybe not one you've ever been in before. And so I think this is a time where, and I'm really glad we're giving this talk 2 weeks out, because I think this is a time where we really want to reconceptualize our expectations and think about how to prepare for this Pesach, because we can't wing it, right? Just like we prepare every year for Pesach, and your anxiety for everyone that's a little bit of a different time, maybe it goes up the second you hear about Purim coming, or maybe it's when, you know, we come to tonight and we're at Rosh Chodesh Nisan, or maybe it was 6 months ago. But we become anxious when Pesach comes because that serves an adaptive purpose. Pesach requires a lot of preparation, and anxiety tends to fuel us towards that, towards doing those preparations, towards getting ourselves ready. Probably we could use a little less anxiety, but it serves that purpose. And right now, I imagine we're all feeling anxious. And what I want to do is shift it away from a helpless anxiety of, I can't believe this is the situation I'm in. I can't believe I might have to be, or I do have to be completely alone for Pesach, or without my family, or without my children or grandchildren or parents, or whatever your situation is, and say, okay, this is going to be different. And this is part of my narrative. This Pesach will be one each of us will always remember. We probably will remember it more than many others. This is going to be part of my life narrative. And how do I prepare for it this year so that I can make it both meaningful and survivable? I need to survive this Pesach, and I need to make it as best as possible for myself. So I really want us to take this time together. You're going to get, some of you have never made Pesach and are making it for the first time. Some of you are old pros, but we all have to prepare. And no matter how many times or how easy you think it is, this is new and this is different. And I want to think about our preparation right now from a very practical perspective. So the first thought I had, which is, of course, we are going to have 3 days, unless you're in Israel and you're tuning in late at night from there, but for most of us, we're going to have 3 days of Chag. And almost all the coping that we have come to learn to do over this period of isolation has been through technology, right? So we're connecting with our friends and our loved ones, with our work, with our gym instructors, with our relaxation techniques. We are doing everything online. Are you kidding me that now that's going to be pulled away from me? How am I going to cope? And the answer in my mind, and it's not going to be easy. I do not want to be pedantic about this. This will not be easy, but it requires preparation. So we can't, what we're doing now, just to cope on a daily basis, is basically knowing ourselves and knowing what skills generally work for us and approximating them in a very non-ideal situation, right? So I know I'm someone who needs to go for a run, and now I'm stuck at home, and I am running on a treadmill or doing this class, and it's an approximation, and it's working as best as we can make it work. But now we're going to have to do a double approximation. Okay, so it's already hard and we're feeling isolated and we're not connecting in person. And so great, but we've really been able to use technology to help and approximate that experience. We have to be even more creative now when we're coming to Pesach. So Lisa's idea was one that I shared a similar one to in terms of writing letters. Find a friend, find a family member, find a couple of friends, and write each other letters or emails. If it's by mail, like, wow, how nice would that be? Because when's the last time you got a handwritten letter? Write each other now. Write each other a letter. It can be meaningful. It can be funny. It can be you print an article and stick it in an envelope and mail it to your friend. And those don't get opened until Pesach. And on Pesach, when you're by yourself, you are going to read your friend's thoughts and feelings and feel connected to them, and they're going to read yours. It's an idea. And again, I'm going to share ideas that I've thought of, and then I'm going to open it up to hearing yours. Some of these will resonate for some of you, some of them won't. But again, it's the approximation. We need to feel connected to people. We're in isolation, and now you're taking away my only means, which is my technology. So what else can we do? Okay. So how can you, maybe it is writing letters. Maybe it's, you know, sharing material that you're going to read and another person's going to read at the same time, but find ways of connection. Relatedly is reading. Okay. We're all going to be doing some form of reading over those 3 days of Chag. Maybe you're a reader, maybe you're not. But what I want you to think about is how to make that a strategy that's more effective. So when you read to passively distract yourself, that's great and that can be useful. But if you read knowing that you're going to have to discuss what you read after the Chag, because you're going to create a book club, and your book club can be you and a friend, or you and a sibling or a family member, or it can be a couple of people together, and you're leading that book club. So as you're reading over Chag, yeah, you need your sticky notes out, so then, you know, you don't get to highlight, but you need to, you know, you need to make sure you sticky note of the passages that meant the most to you, because you're going to have a conversation about what you're reading after. So when you think about what books you want to make sure that you order now, or what articles you want to print, what I would say is don't just print it or order it for yourself. Order it for yourself and for someone else, or for a group of people. And plan on, make sure you plan on that on Chol HaMoed, you guys get together back online, back in this type of format, and you talk about it, and you be. And the reason that's so important, one, is because as you're reading, then you're holding on to the people who are doing this with you. And B, is because we have to become more active in the strategies we're using. So knowing you have to, like, you know the difference between, you know, learning something relaxedly and learning when you know you're going to be examined on it. Turn this into something that you want to have mastery over. Some other thoughts, and these are, I'm going to shift for a second, some pretty practical suggestions or ideas. And again, these are just to trigger your own thoughts, because this is really a time to prepare. So you don't probably think of preparing for Pesach as a time to make sure you order a daily newspaper. But maybe this is the time. You know, if you think it will be very anxiety provoking to you to not have information for a couple of days, so maybe now is when you get a subscription for a few days. If you don't think of Pesach as a time that, you know, you're usually busy cooking or cleaning or planning your menu, okay. Well, here's the thing about Pesach. You can cook. And maybe this is a nice opportunity for you to either make sure you get the things you need so that you cook that traditional thing that you remember your grandmother making. And you get the materials and you print the recipe and you don't have to do it ahead. You can do it on the day if possible, right? Or maybe you try something new, or maybe you figure out what will make it feel special to you. But all of that requires preparation. You know, I asked my kids, what would they do? How do they want to think about it? Because kids are actually a lot more creative. I'm not that creative. And my little son, Yoshua, said, you know what everyone should do? Everyone should get themselves a Rubik's Cube. And not just get a Rubik's Cube, but make sure you download the directions of how to actually do it. What a great idea. Get some sort of games, manipulatives that are challenging. And don't just get it because, yeah, you're going to try that for 5 minutes if you're someone like me and you have no idea and it's getting worse. But learn the mastery of it. We have to find creative ways, right? So print out, how do you solve a Rubik's Cube? Great. If you don't think ahead, you're not going to have that at your fingertips. And we need tools at our fingertips. Those are on a practical level. Make sure that you have, besides books, that you have a Haggadah. Make sure that you have Sfarim. Make sure that you have things to think about and to read that will inspire you, right? If you heard a talk that was inspiring, but it's not written down, your Pesach preparation will be to listen to it again, to the recording, and take notes so that in the moment when you're really feeling you need something, you have it available to you. Those are some ideas. I'll open it in a couple minutes, hear yours, but those are some practical suggestions. In terms of other ways of thinking about Pesach, you know, it's not different than what we need to do now, right? So we've all heard this before, creating a schedule, writing down that schedule. And that schedule should and can include both practical things. I'm going to read at this time. I'm going to daven. at this time, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to spend this time cooking, and I'm going to spend this time doing some meditation, and I'm going to spend this time doing some breathing techniques. Whatever it is, try to create a schedule for yourself as best you can. Try to make it a reasonable schedule. Maybe less ambitious than more ambitious. And give yourself a great deal of credit anytime you do something that's on that schedule. So creating a routine for those days and breaking it down into smaller chunks is really important. It's important now. Anything I'm talking about for Pesach is important now too. So when you think of, oh my God, 3 days, try to break it down and think about, I have an hour, and then I have another hour, and then I have another hour. Some things on the schedule should be practical, and some things should be, I'm going to take these 30 minutes to sing the songs my grandfather used to sing to me on Pesach. Yeah. And to connect to my family's stories and to remember them. To open an album, if you have an album, and to look at pictures of my family or my friends or my loved ones. Another thing to prepare that you can do now is order pictures. Right? Order pictures of people, of things you can. This is, you know, download your phone onto Snapfish and order the whole thing. But have things that you can do in your schedule that both help you practically and that help you connect to meaning. And those things should alternate back and forth and back and forth. Those are my thoughts. I'm going to open it up to hearing your thoughts. This was food for thought as I've tried to think about what will be helpful on Pesach and now. And again, the way I'm really thinking about it, and I hope to share with you, it's a combination of being extraordinarily practical and coping with our hour to hour so that we can get through and survive and maybe thrive for small moments, and then coping to something larger and connecting, to something larger. This is a temporary situation that we're in, and we want to dig in and dig deep and find our strength. Connect. This is part of, this is not a part of our narrative we ever expected or we ever would have chosen, but it is part of experience and of our personal narrative, family narrative, our national narrative, our human narrative. You will be that person, right? I remember, where were you when Kennedy was shot? And where were you during the Yom Kippur War? And this will be, where were you and what was it like for you during the coronavirus? And it's not something we would ever wish upon ourselves, but it is something that we really can cope with, and we can cope with together. The fight is different for each of us and the struggles are different for each of us, but what we do know is being connected to one another, even from afar, is going to strengthen our ability to get through this. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to you. I thank you all for hearing my thoughts. I remind you all that I am thinking of you and caring for you, and I'm here for you. So don't ever hesitate to reach out. And let's keep brainstorming together. If you have other thoughts that you've come up with and want to share, let me know. I can create here's a coping sheet and let people take from it what they can. Remember, this Pesach will be, Pesach will have its challenges, but it also will have its opportunities, right? We have done this as a nation. We have survived. We have survived the Pesach story. We have survived many challenging times, and we will survive this experience. And just one last thought, which I'm going to take directly from what Maurizio Molinari said today that I thought meant a great deal, was while we have to be creative, that's my thought. While we have to be creative in thinking about how to cope with this Pesach, we also have to turn towards our tradition. Right? We have a tradition. We have the text. We have the structure. Right? Pesach is all about that structure. We do it year in and year out. And even if it looks a little different this year than it does in other years, don't turn away from that structure. Lean into that structure. We have the Seder, and we have the model. We have the Haggadah. And we are so enriched for having that. And we are so blessed to be part of a nation that has that. So I'd love to open it up. I think perhaps if you raise your hand and then I can unmute you, that might be the most effective way. So I'm looking now at the list of participants and looking if anyone has any thoughts they want to share, any questions, any ideas that you think would be helpful to one another. I'm seeing so many of your comments. Love all of them. I think Sandra, you said it would be, this will be a really great time to incorporate other people's traditions into our Seder so we can collectively celebrate with each other. That's brilliant. That's beautiful. Yeah. What an amazing idea, right? What a wonderful opportunity we have. Find out what other people's traditions are. And do it. And them knowing you're going to do it and you knowing that they're doing it together with you. What an amazing way to connect. I love that. I'm still looking for hands. I don't know if you all know how to raise your hand. But if you're on with video, you're also welcome to just raise your hand. And if I can see it, I'll take it. Okay. I'm not seeing any questions, so what I'm going to do is unmute it right now, and I'll stay on for a couple of minutes, and anyone who wants to get off before it gets a little chaotic, wonderful, wonderful to spend this time with you and to be with you, and feel free to sign off, and anyone who wants to stay on and chat for a couple of minutes, I'm right here, so I am going to do this somehow. How am I doing this? I am sorry. Oh my goodness. Participants, unmute all. Okay. Okay. We're all on, unless you've muted yourself, now we're all on together. So thank you, everyone. And feel free to, as my kids always do, hang out after class.
See
you.
Hello, wonderful to see you guys. Oh, I missed
nice
all
see
of you
so
much. Now, it's so wonderful to see your faces.
Are you going
to
answer any questions? Are you going to answer a question?
What?
Are you going to answer a question?
I hear someone
question?
Ask a question.
Yes.
What's your question?
I don't have a question. I said, are you going to answer any questions?
I'm sorry that you can't watch the video. It's helpful. So you can see.
Sorry. Sorry,
you're on the moon.
Listen. Larry's on the moon.
Right. At any rate, thank you for including me.
Not coming into our park.
I'll let you go.
Thank you so you're much right. for being
excellent.
Here.
Excellent, Rachel. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Rachel. Thank you.
Oh, it was a pleasure. It's great to hear your voices.
So much fun to hang out
Bye,
with
Rachel.
Everybody.
Thank you, Thea.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. Be well and stay healthy.
Giving
my love to everyone and to your families.
Thank you, baby.
Gladys, it's wonderful to see you.
And he's like, oh, and just walked out.
You know, Gladys introduced me. Gladys Richter introduced me before we went to Israel to her granddaughter who lives in Yad Ben Yamin, and she's become one of my closest friends. From afar, we're going through this together.
No, the people on the.
Hey, Pina.
Hi. Who said that?
Yeah. So, hi, Pina.
Hey, y'all doing?
Hi, Panina.
Hi, Panina.
Hi, Rona.
So many names beyond even the people, just faces. It's really great to see everyone.
What's going on?
All right. I'm going to go have some dinner.
Okay. I'm going to sign it off. Wonderful to connect, and please do again. Don't hesitate to share any more thoughts if this sparked any idea. I think it would actually be wonderful if we could put together, something we can send out with different ideas and readings and ways we can feel connected to one another ahead of the Chag. So great to see everyone. I'm going to sign us all off, and I love seeing you, and I miss you, and we should only be together again very, very soon in good health and safety to share. Okay, have a good night, everyone.
Good night.